stupid? Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em.
That's silly.
Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
Oh, I gotcha!
Hello and well. Wait, no, that's the wrong.
No! That's the wrong one! Hi, everyone! Welcome to the That's Not Quite Old Folks Patreon episode. Ooh, look at that. It's all fancy.
Yeah. I have on my fancy button up. It isn't the ones I usually wear.
No, it isn't. So if you're listening to this, thank you so much for giving to our silly show.
Yeah.
And one of the perks you get for being a $5 patron is that you get exclusive commentaries.
Yes.
We'd have you guys vote for what commentary you'd want us to do, because, you know,
yeah. We
figured after doing the Jay Ward series, maybe just once you'd like to hear us comment on something that
people want to see.
Yeah.
People do want to see, you know, us talk about George of the Jungle and Rocky and Bullwinkle movie, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a lot of people clamoring for Mr. Peabody and Sherman, or even Hey There, Yogi Bear.
Nope.
But,
I have the analytics to prove it.
Yeah, well, you can't win them all. But we figured if we were going to start this off with a commentary that we picked, we figured we should do something that you guys would probably want us to cover, which is why we are doing this.
Yes, it's one of the most recurring gags in our show, and it's all because of this. It's Camera 3, The Boys from Termite Terrace. It's a hour-long episode from the show Camera 3.
It feels like two. And one of those hours is solely dedicated to one sequence. Like, okay. People think this came out of absolutely nowhere. I've talked about this once or twice, but let me just be clear. I watched this when I was maybe like young, like peak Golden Collection years. Maybe I was 9 or 10. And I'm sorry, have we said the name of it yet? Yeah, we did. Okay. Boys from Termite Terrace.
Yeah, good. I said it's Camera 3. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. But I was watching. Because it's the kind of thing, okay, you watch all the shorts, and then eventually, oh, you watch all the bonus features and all the little things on it. And I watched this, and it was, I mean, look, it's not going to be like, you know, a bunch of people talking for an hour is going to bore me or anything. No, not quite, because I really liked Irreverent Imagination. But this was different because it was less focused on the actual chronology of the Termite Terrace unit and more focused on, well, an extended sequence of someone drawing Bugs Bunny sitting down. And I thought it was the weirdest thing to keep going on about. And I thought it lasted like a good 10 minutes. It probably doesn't. I'm going to set a timer when it starts. And we're going to see how long it is. But it felt like forever for me. And so I've always kidded.
Yeah, because something to point out. Watching the animation process is very fascinating.
It
is very cool that you can start with one drawing and then about 200 drawings later you get actual movement. Yeah. That's so cool. Here's the thing though. Well, obviously the animation, because you can't do this with 3D. But like when they usually demonstrate the magic of animation, they usually pick a much more interesting shot than just a character sitting down. Yeah. You know,
like the shot of Bugs doing the Camptown Ladies dance in
exactly
Mississippi
yeah
Air.
Like that's interesting. It's entertaining to watch as well as informative.
But if he's sitting down,
Bunny sitting down,
he's just sitting down. And if you keep talking, I had erroneously remembered that it was like he asked all of them about it, and it was all of them, including Frizz, going, Bugs Bunny, sitting down, in that exact cadence. Because it was like, okay, will you go on to something else? I think I may have just stopped at the end of the first part, because I don't think this, like, after all of that belaboring the point, I don't think I wanted to watch another part of this. So,
yeah. I watched both parts, and listen, I can't even tell you what they talk about.
They talk about Bugs Bunny sitting down.
It's probably the same history that has been reported all the time, except this time it's through the Looney Tunes directors.
And it's with Bob.
So it's one of the few times, I think, where there is a docu thing that does have Bob with the other guys.
Yeah, Bob looking like Roy Orbison at the end.
you know? Yeah. That's exactly what he looks like, though.
Yeah. So you're saying that, like, the other subsequent Talking Head ones, they should have had an empty chair there for Bob, like the video for End of the Line?
Well, it's all right.
No. Oh, my God. The Traveling Terrences. Wait, but then who would be Bob Dylan? Who would be the one person there that's like, really? You? They got you here?
Well, I guess we're going to find out, because I forget if, like, because I know that Chuck, Frizz, and Bob are in this. I forget if anyone else is.
Let's see, I have the summary here. Mel Blanc is.
Mel, yes.
But Mel Blanc would make sense. Yeah. Mel Blanc would be fun.
I don't know. And John Canemaker is the Jeff Lynne, as in, like, okay, I guess you're here as well.
Yes, and John Canemaker, he's shown up in contemporary Looney history, but he shows up in Behind the Toons. He shows up
in a lot of
animation documentaries, which is why it's kind of funny, because it's a young John Canemaker, and it's like, oh. Him with an afro, or whatever. I don't know.
It's Bob Ross.
He has more hair.
No, it'd be fun if it was Bob Ross doing Bugs Bunny sitting down. But no, it's this schmo.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna watch this. And, you know, sure.
I commentate. Have some fun.
I hope so.
Yes, yeah, so, I'll pull some interesting facts about the series if we get...
The interesting fact is that Bugs Bunny, did you know this, sits down.
No.
I'm going to be... End of the Line is going to be stuck in my head through the whole...
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so we found this on YouTube. It should still be on YouTube by the time this hits in, like... A couple weeks.
It's been up for about a year.
Yeah. If for some reason it's not on YouTube, it is on the Golden Collection. I believe it is the second one, but do not quote me on that.
Pretty sure it's on the first one.
Then it's on the first one. It is on one of the first two, definitely.
Yes. Which you can buy for 30% off at your local Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, I was at B&N the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah, the first three are here. So, and they're in different cases, too, so... Click clear cases.
Yeah, they're in slimmer shelf friendly cases.
Yeah, they've lost weight. It's great.
Yeah, good for them. Mm-hmm. Got that on that diet plan.
So yeah, we have this up on YouTube. If you want to watch it with us, press play when we say 3, 2, 1 start or whatever we do, and you get to watch us riff this thing as you watch it. Because if we're gonna suffer, we might as well suffer together.
Your hard money at work.
Yep.
Thanks. So you can follow us as we're gonna have some fun.
Yes, I hope so.
All right.
So I'm gonna attempt to start this in 3, 2, 1, play.
Okay.
We were all youthful,
right from the get go.
Edit, goddamn.
Vinegar. And just had fun in making cartoons. We had a lot of fun, and it showed.
Somewhat youthful, Frizz.
Okay, but Thomas, good choice.
The only thing is because it's the 70s.
Oh!
We would use little gags, like when Porky's Ducky.
I'm so tired.
He had breakthrough gags where Porky's on a script, you know, and he looks it up and he says to the duck.
Is that you're saying about the 70s?
It, because it's the 70s, a lot of these cartoons are actually kind of in shit quality, but, you know, they try.
Pepe Le Pew, for instance, is a character.
Chuck looks youthful.
I'd like to be the kind of a person that girls adore, you know, and can't ever see anything wrong with him.
Huh. Is that true?
See? Nothing wrong with him. Nothing at all.
And he'll have stands as well that are going to see no flaws in him.
Quelle est? Ah, les belles femmes skunk fatales.
I still laugh, but...
darling, it is love at first sight, is it not? No?
It's good. Wait, that's because for sentimental reasons it's such a...
Duck, they wanted him to say real bad about something.
Ducky story.
And I said, why don't you get a word where he can have an S's in it so that he can spray when he speaks?
Shit.
Someone, I don't know who it was, said, how about despicable? I said, great. You're despicable.
I love this, like, just how happy Mill is to talk about his characters and his mindset about voicing them. You know?
Yeah.
You're despicable.
Hey, I said the thing.
The end. Wait, no. No, well, no, the start.
Who's the guy in the middle?
Did we Drew see Carey. That
guy? I'm John Canemaker for Canada.
Oh, God. Here he goes.
Hi, John.
Bob Clampett, Frizz Frayling, Mel Blanc, and Chuck Jones. They were some of the guys who turned out the funniest animated cartoons ever made.
He's talking about cartoons, yet he sounds so
dead.
I like these.
It was a thrill for me to meet and to listen to these artists.
Was he the host of this show?
Develops such great characters.
I think he's one of the hosts.
Bunny and Daffy Duck, and how they
because if you're thinking, okay, on-air personality, and this is the first guy that comes to mind.
Emotional and entertainment palette of American animation. This style was developed at Termite Terrace, which was the affectionate nickname that the artist gave to a dilapidated old cartoon building on the Warner's lot in downtown Hollywood. Warner's began making animated
I love how they always have a sense of humor. All those buildings are a piece of shit.
Let's make a name out of it.
But during the peak years, the most successful years of the late 30s...
It's just rip torn at this point, but okay.
The gang from Termite Terrace had grown to a group of 200, and they were turning
out... Hey, why can't they tell us this? There are the people we're here to see.
Warner's officially closed its cartoon studio in 1964.
But then they kept beating out that dead horse.
Indeed, most of the Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes that are still cracking you up every morning on television are films that were made
they are.
Or even 40 years ago. But amazing, still as fresh and as vital.
40 years. That's the oldest we could possibly think.
Being made today. Our story begins with a man whose very name is synonymous with the animated cartoon. Walt Disney.
Oh,
no.
In 1923, Walt Disney set up his Hollywood studio, and within 2 years, he was expanding his staff with young cartoonists whom he had previously known and worked with in Kansas City.
Including this child.
Harman, Rudolph Ivan, Frizz Frayling, and a very small draftsman by the unusual name of
Ub looks like he just walked in on him in the shower.
Is credited with the design of Mickey Mouse, and was the man responsible for the establishment of the Disney style.
Just throw in a little tiny
hole. Style is based on skilled draftsmen.
Yes, it is.
Okay, good.
Reality.
That'll grow. Go great.
Everyone who ever worked at Disney.
He also looks like he just walked in on a machine.
Bosco the Talking Kid.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Sales film
not racist whatsoever.
Harmonizing. No. We're now independent
producers. We're now incarcerated in L.A. County.
Leon Schlesinger, who was able to get a Bosco series released through Warner. And the series was called Looney Tunes.
This is my idea.
The series, Merry Melodies, soon followed, which also imitated in title and more so in content.
Kill me.
Popular musical series, The Silly Symphony.
Oh, The Silly Symphony.
In 1932, Harmonizing left for MGM, taking Bosco with him.
You could have them tell this story.
Oh, my God.
Because he had no popular characters, and He was starting to do stories that were rehashes of...
They call him Cane Maker because he talks so long that pretty soon you'll be using a cane.
...had arrived at the studio in 1931 while harmonizing were still...
That's the way they're all, like, kind of popular characters. Just the... They're getting desperate. Really desperate. Super desperate.
Yes. ...and distortion in his animation... And anything for a laugh approach that
so apparently that Bugs Bunny model he's holding, it still exists.
Wow,
I think it's on display somewhere.
Did he steal it, Cane Maker?
Leon Schlesinger was not...
I think Bob stole it.
I like the little loony decals on Bob's shirt.
Try out our own ideas.
Yeah, apparently he would wear those to like college meetings. Which, give me, it's a good shirt.
Who in the early days had movies, had been a barker on a movie thing where they people would get on a railroad car and the scenery would go by in motion pictures and he would be the barker on that. So he was somewhat of a showman at heart, you see.
Oh, yeah.
And Leon did contribute certain things. He had a vaudeville sense. And he was the one that says, hey, let's have the music a little faster on the main title. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You see, if it wasn't for Leon, that would have been played a little slower. On the ends, he always says, let's end with one good gag and then Iris fast, leave him laughing, and then hit him with the fast music. That was Leon.
Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah, he was gone by that point, but sure. It's Eddie, I think. Eddie, who had no sense of humor.
About this time, I was feeding a lot of gag ideas and story ideas to Leon.
Cut the chick watching this. What the hell?
Just to show that I
could. Hey, we have ideas as well.
And he said, here's what I have in mind. He says, there's a fellow at Universal that I think could make a very good director. And he said, what I'm going to do is team you with him. I want you to collaborate with him on stories. And I'm going to give you two fellas your own little building in the middle of the
I've never seen hair go sideways.
I could right up through the ceiling like a skyrocket. I was so excited.
That can't be his real hair.
I met Tex Avery for the first time.
In 1935, Schlesinger hired his most innovative director, Tex Avery.
We couldn't get him.
He said, I attempted to do things that Walt Disney wouldn't dare to do. And indeed, Avery
might be
was
funny.
The first of the Warner's directors to move that studio away from imitating the increasingly realistic...
Tex was still alive by this point. Animation.
And here's a
you could have gotten them.
It was made that day by one of the artists in the studio. As Tex and I left Leon's office and headed over for what became Termite Terrace. The first morning that Tex and I arrived, we sat in this funny, dilapidated little wooden building all by ourselves. We were all alone. But by noontime, we decided that we weren't actually maybe alone.
Cut the frizz. Actually, I was there too.
We decided to call it Termite Terrace. About a year later, Tex got the
Here's Johnny!
Sir, not appearing in this film.
All these crazy ducks in it. We eventually boiled it down to one duck. And Tex gave me the first scene of Daffy to animate, in which he said, make him exit funny. And I had him do the funny jumps.
Make him exit funny. I like that.
Pencil test on that.
Do a funny exit.
We thought it was so funny, but it needed some sound with it, some music or some voice. So we decided to put the... woos on it, and that was recorded and laid in afterwards.
It's me again.
After we saw the full picture of how funny it was for Daffy to do the woos around the screen, we said,
we decided to do it every single time.
So we decided on the end title where it says, that's all, folks. Tex had me animate Daffy coming in around the letters, doing the woo-woos around the letters.
Oh. Okay.
Porky must have been sick that day.
It was this type of thing that was brand new, and it was the start of the Warner style.
The first cartoon was called Sinking in the Bath.
Oh, God.
Hanging in the Bath.
Had Tiptoe Through the Tulips in it. This was, I guess... 1930. We made the first...
Wait, actually...
22.
Frizz Freleng has spanned the entire development of the Warner cartoon...
Can you let him talk?
No.
Freeling's cartoons evidence a great interest in showmanship and dance, and few more skillful in the synchronization...
I'm happy!
Music, my soul, please! Black from the top.
Again, they're really playing the hits in a lot of these, a lot of the ones that we'd see recreated again in later specials and such, but to be fair, they are pretty good. But you can definitely see the disservice the 70s prints of them give.
Especially the audio.
Yeah.
Trying to beat out Mickey Mouse, who was a little Boy Scout, you know. Disney didn't dare change Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse was a little bitch.
From the early 30s, and
I bet he never sits down.
Very reluctant to change him because people knew Mickey Mouse, and he stayed with him.
He probably lies down, the bastard.
And you gotta wake him up and wait for him to get to set. See, the fun thing is that when this goes out, you'll be able to hear Mark mouthing the bit from Showbiz Bugs as it happens. The
cartoons that we designed,
as I just did,
never designed in our minds for children. All our audiences were adults, really.
See? Last Hungry Cat.
Cut to one of the...
Actually, no, it's Birds Anonymous. I just... wishful thinking.
I'm pretty adult. But
I can do two things. I can use clips, or I can tell the story myself. I can't actually talk to them and let them tell it.
Chuck Jones started animating for Ernst Schlesinger in 1935 and has been directing since 1938. He is probably the most famous living cartoon director and brought to the screen The Roadrunner and Coyote.
Okay, fuck you, Frizz.
I'm right here.
Of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck.
Yeah, another. Oh, yeah, this is a really bad print, but okay.
Yeah, that is a bad print. Right-o. He's...
Is he still there?
Still lurking about. Okay, I'm guilty of it as well.
I tell you what, you go up and act as a decoy and lure him away.
Yeah.
No more for me, guys. I'm driving.
At the beginning, I kind of tried to imitate the Disney style.
Is he at the terminal of the LAX or something?
And the stuff was a lot softer. And I guess I'm not really that soft.
He's in a black room in Burbank.
A tendency when you work cute characters to be talking down a little bit. And I found out that I better deal with characters that are...
Which, to be 100% fair, that this is the truth.
Yeah. Certainly not my own triumph.
No, he's trying to make this work. They all are. It's just... The guy just... A rare Roadrunner gag I haven't seen in a while. Uh-oh. Okay. Even in not great quality, those gags still work for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Roadrunner Coyote gag. It always...
We didn't think of ourselves as being anything but having fun and enjoying making the pictures. And getting paid not as much as we would have liked to have been paid, but we took it out by doing this permanently.
Fair. And, some things never change.
We had a lot of fun doing the films. We were like a mad bunch of otters, and we really enjoyed it.
An otter's tale. Again, these are good ones, even if they are overplayed.
Yeah. Also, this is one of the shorts that we heard live.
Yes, it was great.
Also a rabbit hater. Oh, well.
Tex Avery, shown in the center here, is credited as the creator of the definitive Bugs Bunny.
No, I really thought he was the two people's faces we don't see.
And more on the recognition of animation's potential for abstraction and surrealism.
You imagine, like, Tex Avery was like the most mysterious person in the world.
He's Batman.
And there's one photo of him in the world.
There's a couple, yeah.
Characters walking out and reading their credits.
He lives in the shadows.
The real audience getting up and interacting with audience.
Directing a bear's tail in complete darkness.
Distancing devices.
Which explains why it's not very good. To us, people probably like
it. In 1941, to go to MGM, the devices blossomed in his films there.
Hey, this isn't Warner Brothers.
He just said he went to MGM and his cartoons got better. Oh, hello.
In Tex Avery's 1949 MGM cartoon, Little Rural Riding Hood.
Oh yeah, we cover this one.
Yeah.
What makes me love you so?
I don't know if it was this one that we watched. We watched a little Red Hot Riding Hood. This is, I think, a different one.
Yeah.
The one where Red Riding Hood is of age, I hope. Dick Savory, man. We talk shit about him, but, like, to be fair, when he's on and when he's composed to some degree, it works.
This sounds dangerously close to the Wallace and Gromit theme.
Da, 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 a little da, bit, yeah. Da, da, the swing da, days da, of...
Okay. Here it is. Time it. Series of
individual drawings, each one slightly different than the one that precedes it and the one that follows after. And it is on this special drawing board with a metal disc that moves around and a piece of glass and a light shining through underneath that the animator works on the sometimes thousands of drawings that may be required for even the shortest 10-minute animated cartoon. Animators have been called actors with pencil.
This is what this is about.
Because not only do they create characters that can move and dance and sing,
3 hours,
but they also create characters that can express emotions.
Unlike you.
Create moods and affect audiences, make you laugh and cry.
Again, unlike you.
Any flesh and blood
you.
He's going to see this and get so pissed. To many fine animators who are capable of creating full personality.
He's
going to
give us money?
I'll take it. There was Ken Harris, Virgil Ross, Robert Bobo Cannon.
Again, okay. Sir not appearing in this film.
And Lou Garnier, Robert McKimson.
Oh, who also was in this.
Oh, animator who later became was also a director.
And Frank Tashkin, right. Also worked as an animator. Okay. Director.
Who's...
And he developed many of the ideas that he used later in his
like, that's what's a fortune, is that, like, this, after like, this 70s is the best time recorded, to get all the Looney Tunes directors' records, and they just didn't.
Now, these are the drawings that tell the story. For instance, in this Bugs Bunny sitting
one.
Down,
yeah!
They have started by drawing just this first drawing of Bugs standing up, and then the second drawing of him sitting down.
Two.
Like this. Then he would take these drawings to the animator and explain to him why Bugs was sitting down.
Three.
And then these...
it usually wasn't important.
And the pose drawings plus the exposure sheet would enable the animator to go ahead and complete the action so that it fitted properly into the film. These pose drawings are very important because they establish the director's style and personality in them. For instance,
yeah. Hey, whose drawing is that, by the way?
We don't know.
Drew those.
He talks for 3 hours, but he doesn't say that. Oh, it's over?
Say a line like, "Ooh, the poor putty tat. He fall down."
Okay.
Is that really it?
See, now when I had him say,
"That's really all of Bugs Bunny sitting down." It was just that.
2/3 of the screen, you see, way out of context of the cute little bird, but...
Maybe they go back to it.
It set the audience back in their seats, and then they roared with laughter.
Jones poses, on the other hand...
Okay.
More,
back to poses.
...understated quality with very subtle emotional shadings.
With me, there's always a limit, because... I'm
this is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm primarily
they're talking about their style, how they...
What Bugs Bunny is, but who he is. So to get inside of what he is.
Who is this fictional creation?
So that was the reason that our characters, that Bugs Bunny, who was animated by and directed by originally and most needfully by Tex Avery, but Frizz and Bob McKimson and Clampett, and I always had slightly different rabbits.
Oh, shit, he's a Clampett.
They were worked in different ways.
That's
not
interesting.
So much they were,
that's weird.
They really got completely off track. But,
so this must have been before Bugs Bunny wrote him.
Yeah, probably.
All shorts begin with an idea.
Images again.
They only have a couple.
Perhaps the studio's top gagman was Mike Maltese, who was a storyman from 1937.
Who they also could have gotten.
Working alone or in collaboration with Ted Pierce. From 1946,
could they only afford the four?
Exclusively for Chuck Jones' unit. Maltese wrote and sketched, for all the storymen had to be able to translate their ideas into drawings. Some of the funniest cartoons ever to come out of Termite Terrace, full of Mack Sennett-like sight gags and clever dialogue. Here in a clip from Rabbit Seasoning is Maltese at the top of his form, combining literacy with slapstick.
We love Chuck Jones, too. But, like,
come on.
Give the other guys credit, too.
What's the matter with you anyway? Don't you even know a rabbit when you see one?
Yeah, again, this
is a really bad print, by the way.
It's true, Doc. I'm a rabbit, all right. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now!
Shoot him now, shoot him now.
You say this as if it's like you're sick of it.
He doesn't have to shoot you now. He just will have to shoot me now. I command that you shoot me now. Would you like to shoot me now or wait till you get home? Shoot him now. Shoot
Notice
him
how
now.
He's not fucking sitting down in this.
Doesn't have to shoot you now.
Yeah, he's not.
Hold it right there.
No one is.
Trouble.
Oh, or there. Gags, oh, actually,
Maltese
he is.
Builds the gags as intricately as Keaton did to an inevitable explosive climax.
Statement isn't adding up because he has the cartoons, he has them, and he's talking a lot, and
like the best part is when he lets them speak for themselves.
Yes.
Music played an important part in the Warner's cartoons,
okay.
Often commenting on the stories with a contemporary tune from Warner's own music publishing firm. The man responsible for the development of the cartoons' music was Carl Stalling. A
who we didn't get for this
because he was dead.
Where he also met Walt Disney.
Oh,
right.
Later in Hollywood, Stalling became the Disney Studios' first musical director.
Think so.
In 1936, he joined the Warner's gang and composed over 600
cartoons for
22 years.
Yeah, he was dead. But
in Showbiz Bugs, we can hear how Stalling used music as a background theme.
We're on.
Yeah, it really just sounds like this is like his final essay or for his final project for a class.
Also, if you're did Stalling do What's Up, Doc, or was that Milt?
I think that was Milt Franklin.
Yeah.
And in countless cartoons, Stalling's vigorous music is used as a subtext, which perfectly mirrored the animation and often commented on it.
To be fair, this is a great bit from this. Oh!
Oh. Okay.
Now I have seen everything.
No, not enough of it. Yeah, now this is at least a good point because all of this makes backs it up, I think.
Yeah, I used to make some of the sound effects verbally,
yes.
Such as the.
You know.
And I used to do it better. It was more like.
Oh, excuse me.
Bugs Bunny being whipping down.
The man responsible for coordinating and creating the brilliant sound effects in the cartoons was Treg Brown.
Oh yes. Well, we also couldn't get those.
Treg had thousands of sound effects on short reels, and he would make up a whole soundtrack out of these, as well as adding new ones for each cartoon.
Which they really should still be using, but
the Hanna-Barbera ones are cheaper.
Oh my god! Did this secret from Duck come up with the Hanna-Barbera sound effects?
Oh god, it would suck so bad.
I mean, we got the YouTube channel.
You could honestly do it if you wanted to.
Back.
Gangway!
They shall sample my blade. Touche! Oh! Musketeers? En garde! My blade! Hey, whoever's in charge here, the scenery. Where's the scenery?
A major contributor to the uniqueness of
he's
the
doing the line from Duck Amuck in like current.
It's difficult to think of any of the cartoons without their unique voices. They were a major part of their personalities. Here, Mel Blanc and Chuck Jones recreate a recording session of 22 years ago for a Daffy Duck short, Duck Amuck.
Well, that's honestly pretty cool.
In order to add an unusual quality to Blanc's voices of Porky Pig,
only
and Daffy
22
Duck,
years.
The recording was speeded up slightly on a machine called the Thiotron.
Exactly. Right.
Okay, have a sure way. Daffy Ducky had a farm.
He owned an igloo. And on this farm, he had an igloo.
Igloo?
So good.
Would it be too much to ask if we could make up our minds?
The director was the one who pulled all of these elements together. And he was an animator, so he knew how to make characters.
Same time! Oh.
Many of the characters often took on his personality and idiosyncrasies.
Well, where's the rest of me?
Why do we cut back
to my contract? Goodness knows. And goodness knows, it isn't as though I haven't kept myself trim, goodness knows. I've done that. That's strange. All of a sudden, I don't quite feel like myself. Oh, I feel all right, and yet
hey, remember when Rabbits Run trying to gain some cred by having this image in the film for 2 seconds? Number one,
possibly, yes. Didn't do much, though.
Disney slipped with his shorts and went into the features, and he spent more of his time and thoughts into the features.
Okay.
Sour persimmons, cousin.
Did you know that John Canemaker did a music video version of John Lennon's "Whatever Get You Through the Night"?
Just done. That's the nice thing about it. You know,
really
historic. When I go someplace, I'm treated as an artifact, but my films are not. And boy, that is nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, there will be no further delays, so I shall attempt to entertain you in my own inimitable fashion.
Termite Terrace was a wonderful moment because it was an opportunity to do something completely original. It was a new hope.
Under a spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy slams.
You get it, you have Duck and Muck.
Rather than man is same as strong as cinnamon. And... all right, enough is enough. This is the final, the very, very last straw. Who is responsible for this? I demand that you show yourself. Who are you?
Huh?
Am I a stinker?
Well, yes, Duck and Muck is a great cartoon. Thanks for reminding me.
It is, but you see...
Hey, Chuck Drawing.
So that's the end of the first part of this.
Next week, Camera 3 will explore in further
detail. They couldn't even do it in, the full block.
And we'll see why some animated characters were successful and became stars, and why some did not.
Ooh.
Like Chuck and Bob.
Who are we going to roast?
Probably the people that aren't there.
Music hater.
Greg Ford.
That's nice. Again, this is one of the worst cartoons. Yeah, special consultant, Greg Ford. I would have loved to see him host this rather than what we got.
It was recorded?
Sadly.
How many American families buy U.S. savings bonds from the payroll savings plan?
Oh, about 9.5 million.
Has commercials?
9.5 million.
Apparently.
Ooh.
And viewers like you.
Premier.
Jack Palance.
In my time, in my town, Jack Palance has only seconds. So all these people want to find this man.
This wasn't a refined cut of this.
Premier tonight on CBS.
Damn, VCR is broken.
Jack Palance shot it.
Honey.
Fortunately,
here we are again.
We at Warner Brothers had the
He looks the same age as he does in the 80s and the 90s.
Under the umbrella of Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies.
Oh.
We came up under that umbrella with about 14 different characters. The first one was Porky Pig, Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, Sylvester the cat, working with Tweety, so that was a team. Coyote, the Roadrunner.
Yes. Name some more for us.
Sam, who worked with the popular character Bugs Bunny.
Right.
And he showed me a picture of a little rabbit.
And here's Bugs.
He said he's a tough little stinker, and we need a tough voice for him. So I said, why not? So I figured, which is the funniest, which is the toughest, the Brooklyn or the Bronx? So I put the two of them together.
And that's how Bugs Bunny came out, Doc.
He's told that several times. Stinker.
It still is, I guess.
Mr. Jones, wait. Oh, please, wait. Oh, Mr. Jones, Frankie and Perry just aren't in it. You're my swooner, dreamboat, lover boy. May I have your autograph, please? Oh, may I? Oh, thank you, Mr.
This is John Canemaker for Camera 3.
Is he sitting down?
Please stop drawing.
The animated cartoons Please. Of the boys from Termite Terrace, that being the nickname the cartoon directors gave to the Warner Brothers Animation Studio.
Which you would have known if you had tuned in last Bugs week, Bunny. You silly bastard.
Hey, Chuck's talking right now. He just has to talk.
Actually, the easiest way to draw
Thank you.
The Bugs Bunny is to draw
a Last week, we also said...
Like so. You notice the pinky up, which is very important. It indicates a kind of an elegance about the rabbit, which is a part of his character.
Bugs Bunny started off.
The longest tenure of any cartoon director at Warner Brothers was
Holy
held by Frizz
fucking
Frame.
God!
Cast as a rabbit who was defending himself against a hunter. That I think that was the first cartoon was made, and was done by Tex Avery. I'm talking about the rabbit that finally ended up being a popular rabbit. There were
no, I'm talking about the rabbit here.
Sometimes there's a man.
That wasn't even the same character. Man. Really. He was a wild, insane character. And that was...
Which, to be fair, Bugs Bunny would sing Tumbling Tumbleweed.
The character who would become Bugs Bunny made his screen debut in 1938 in Porky's Hair Hunt. But it would be
because
two
it's
years
not
and three
technically
more
a bug
before
short.
The sophisticated, understated nah, Bugs Bunny short. Personality we all know would emerge in director Tex Avery's A Wild Hare. Time passed and the years were kind to Bugs Bunny, improving
well,
and streamlining not only his appearance
okay.
but his entire personality.
Do they only have the rights to for six shorts?
I think so, yeah.
The drawing of the character, but to the tremendous amount of attention the directors placed on
We
his
have
behavior.
Amateur hosting, amateur editing,
drawing, we put down
amateur short selection.
Then we have to decide what, how do these
amateur
structures?
It
was nice though.
You can see the Oscar in the back. That's great.
Yeah.
You
know, with the yeah, the Oscar.
By the way they stand, who are they? So that you can imitate them. In other words, you can imitate Daffy with this feeling, like he's got to move. Even when he's laughing, he's in a position to move away. They say Keaton, the Buster Keaton's basic thing of, since he couldn't change his facial expression, practically everything he did was with his feet. So that when he was like this, if he's going to move away or if he's going to jump up and down. So everything was done there, but the face had to stay still, so it had to be body. So then we discovered, we're not, you know, we will steal from most any source.
Just imagine, but, like, he does all
Daddy
this, the secretary comes
then,
in.
Mr.
Like Jones?
This,
Mr. Jones, who are you talking to?
What? Whoa.
Can you see that guy?
What are you doing?
On one leg, and the other leg's out of place, and he brings it up. He takes a bite. He says, what's up, Doc? Now, that's where Tex Avery really established the character, when Bugs came out and looked over Elmer's shoulder and took a bite out of the carrot and says, what's up, Doc?
Okay, you have... rabbit.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
Gotcha.
Okay, we've done the rest of our world here.
What's up, Doc?
I'm hunting wabbits. It's wabbit season.
Oh. Wabbit season, huh? Having any luck?
It's Bugs is being a counter-revolutionary.
I wish it was just more about stuff like this and less about.
This
is Bugs Bunny. Yeah.
Chuck was more sophisticated, kind of a
surprised
guy,
it was
gave,
less
he started yeah. educating Bugs. He started using words that the average these and those guys don't even know, but Chuck knew, and he started injecting those into the.
Frizz is 100% right,
yeah.
though.
Like Nimrod and Fricassee.
That we had to get back to the D's and D's character.
Leopold!
Again.
Oh my
Each
god.
Each one drifted into a different direction.
It's a great short.
It is.
That's the only one.
We're seeing all of it throughout the entirety of this hour-long
concept
thing.
Concept of the character. we had to remind each other that what bugs really
and they cut out the weirdest parts.
In the exchange of our thoughts and storyboards,
amateur editing,
we worked together on storyboards. We would remind each other to get back on the track what bugs really was. When Chuck did it, he was kind of a short-legged little rabbit, and he became a kind of a Groucho Marx.
By always starting him out as a rabbit and then letting him engage, he's more like Groucho Marx, perhaps. Of course, you realize this means war.
Into Las Vegas, San Bernardino. Of course, you realize this means war.
You see, Disney characters didn't quote.
No, they weren't allowed to.
Continuing to as a series develop disciplines. That is things that you, as Groucho Marx says, humor isn't so much what you do as what you don't do. You narrow the character down. When you think of a person like Chaplin.
Nice Roadrunner statue, by the way.
I mean, if it's going to be Chuck Jones's office, it's got to at least be well adorned, and I think it really is.
Curiously enough, the same Chaplin.
I'm glad that they at least had all these lived in spaces like their actual offices rather than just, you know, John's room. Here is my bedroom. I still live with my parents, but they don't mind. We allowed all three of these people into my room to talk about Termite Terrace and Bugs Bunny sitting down. They were not completely impressed.
John!
So I shot them.
Jonathan!
Now, the next thing you need to do to animate Bugs Bunny sitting down...
Jonathan, do you and your friends need anything?
Not now, Mama!
Of course, you know. This
yes, point.
Yes, point. It's into Chuck Jones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, again, they have to show every square foot of this cartoon. I mean, it's a good cartoon, but, you know.
Hey, you know what's a cartoon I'm not seeing, by the way?
Acoustically.
About Plant Book Cartoon?
Yeah. We haven't seen any of those.
Did they? I mean, maybe when the black and white ones were, like...
I'm sorry. Old habits.
Well, now on
oh, yeah.
What's Opera, Doc?
Oh, finally. Are we going to see What's Opera,
I
Doc?
I don't know.
Let's find out.
The Ring of the Nibelung, which Wagner's Ring of the Nibelung, which is an obstacle course in opera. And then this was all pre-recorded. It happened. The Warners had an enormous orchestra there. They were doing something. I don't remember what it was. And we had a 60-piece orchestra, full symphony orchestra to do the music, and it was all pre-recorded. And all
they were just recording the Ten Commandments.
There were 104 cuts. Oh, where's your Messiah now?
Everything lived up to the music.
Oh, yay. Okay. Hooray, a different one. Which, by the way, if you haven't heard What's Opera Not Conducted by the Orchestra, you're not living.
Be very quiet. I'm hunting rabbits.
Another discipline here was that it was the basic Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd situation, except that they were playing it as Wagner played, and everybody had to sing their parts.
This just works, man.
Killed a rabbit.
Mel Blanc is a fine musician, and that helped enormously. And Arthur Q. Bryan, who did Elmer, had one time been a boy chorister.
Oh, mighty warrior of great fighting stock, might I inquire to ask him what's up, Doc?
It just works, man. And again, like they're picking the good stuff, even if it is over-heralded.
I kind of enjoy Bugs, though, as Brunhilde, when he got dressed up in one place in there and put a helmet on.
Which was my original idea, and my original idea alone.
Bob
who? Like Brunhilde. And had enormous eyebrows. He looked real kind of sexy and nice.
Hair who?
He just played it right to the core, which is the way...
Sexy and nice?
Everything. He was playing Brunhilde, by God. He was Brunhilde.
Yes, I know it. I can't help it.
Oh, Brunhilde, be my love.
the brass hit as the horse sits down.
When I did cartoons, I did them mostly with Yosemite Sam, who was more of an aggressive.
Yeah, I like this. Or something like your approach to Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Better than the John stuff.
Bugs was more on the defense.
This one won me an Oscar. I'm still not sure why.
Like, this kind of analysis, I'm fine with. Yeah.
Stupid dragon.
How's the water, Doc?
Open that bridge, Farman! Open it, I say!
It just works.
Close it! Close it up again! Okay, Rabbit. You forced me to use force!
In Ferris Bueller's case, when he had the Yosemite Sam, who's an explosive character, you know, and he leaps up and says, I hate Wabbit!
Quick! The singing sword's been stolen! Wake up, fire-breathing lizard! Ow. Stop breathing on me, you idiot!
Yeah.
Yosemite Sam, toughest guy that ever shot a gumdrop.
I know how you got to Yosemite Sam, and that was because you just simply got inside of Frizz and studied his
This soul. Is good.
If Frizz spoke the way he thought, that's what he would sound like. Yeah. That's why he could do Yosemite Sam, you know? He really explosive kind of a personality.
Again, only the one Sam cartoon, apparently.
You idiot.
Oh.
A major contributor to the personalities of the Warner characters, one might say the soul of the characters, was the voice expert Mel Blanc.
Okay,
strong, recognizable voice created a link between the cartoons and the audience and gave a foundation of reality to the outrageous gags on the screen.
No, don't sneeze, you stupid dragon, or you'll blow us to the moon!
So good.
Dragons, you so stupid.
Adios. Have a nice trip.
You could have cut it there.
Farewell to thee.
Good.
They always showed me the picture first and asked me to create a voice for it. Of course, they told me what the story was going to be, and then I would have to create a voice for it. I said, if a pig had talked, you talk with a grunt. You know, a pig says, oink, 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 oink. That's why that Porky got a voice. Then they showed me a picture of a big sloppy cat and a little baby bird. And so I went accordingly. I created the voice for a little Tweety as a little baby.
Ooh, I thought I saw a pretty cat.
And Sylvester was sloppy, so I made him sloppy. You know, suffering succotash. You better saw putty tat. That putty tat is me.
I thought I saw a
pussycat. Oh, look,
the little French skunk. They told me he was a great lover.
So I give him the lover's voice. Such as the
to be fair, he's still great at these.
Ah, c'est l'amour.
Yeah.
Ah, c'est toujours. Ah, c'est l'amour.
Oh, no, not Speedy.
Speedy Gonzalez. Was a little tiny Mexican mouse.
So I made him a little mouse, talk very fast, too. Talk so fast you could hardly understand what he said.
Oh! Another cartoon? I didn't think any more were going to be showing up.
I don't get that in the budget.
It's not in the script.
Several characters appeared over the years in Warner shorts who, for a variety of reasons, did not sustain public interest and did not become big stars. Here, for instance, is Caveman Inky and the Minibird.
Oh! I know them. Oh, well, you see, the thing is. The Minibird I do remember from. The Circuit Pretty Mysteries. These two lasted. What are you talking about?
Mark Anthony.
Yeah, they're great.
Full episode on them.
To the face. To the face. Yay. Oh. It markets your favorite.
A singing frog with plenty of personality was used in only one short, the allegorical One Froggy Evening.
Here's what's funny about this, right?
The problem with One Froggy Evening was that we had to have a frog that was believable as a frog. It couldn't be just an anthropomorphic character again, to use the rather gaudy term.
I like that.
That is a character who...
Chuck's thing is, he likes to talk smart, but he's like...
So we had to study frogs.
But he's not abrasive about it. He's like, yeah.
Any of you remember, if you ever picked up a frog, you know, they hang there and their little arms hang down like this, and they sort of sloppy and stuff like that, so we got the feeling that...
Kiyomaru, at this point, another frog was getting prominence.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a head is separate from the rest of him. So what I did in this case was to try to figure out a character that was starting with a mouth, because he's a singing.
He's drawing the character you gave 4.5 out of 5 stars to.
When he sings, he's a straight frog until he starts to sing, and then for a short time he becomes this mad guy, and he wears a top hat.
And then this would be the
dances along
mascot of a short-lived TV network.
Body, which is true of most of the frogs.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
When you come to think about it.
That is Buffy the Vampire Slayer's boss.
So he danced.
Oh, he's so good. I'm fine with this. He's not sitting down, so it's okay. It's not laborious.
Yeah, it's all good.
This would be the cane coming through here.
Wait, it's Chuck Jones drawing the character. That's just, I'm sorry, that's way more entertaining.
Hello, and here is how Bugs Bunny sits down.
Way the character worked when he was in action. When he wasn't in action,
it's occurring to me what his voice reminds me of. It reminds me of from the MST3K, Final Sacrifice. The kid from that. The guy goes, "Master,
it's
true. My father went missing." Okay, buddy.
It sounds like
which is what he does. He goes from this action to this action. And that was the whole point about the frog.
There.
A real frog who suddenly jumps up and sings and dances.
See? It gets you.
Yes.
So good.
You know, I saw a video recently of a barbershop quartet doing this song, but through different decades of music.
Of course.
It's entertaining as hell. He talks, he sings,
he sings. Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest series of animated cartoons ever made are the Roadrunner and Coyote series.
He's giving Chuck a lot of praise.
The coyote looks sort of like...
I'm noticing that.
Yeah, it's
which,
very
to be fair, we're one to talk. We've covered a lot of Chuck Jones cartoons. If you want to make somebody look star, not a lot of...
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Which I'm trying to rectify. But,
and he's always looking sort of
faintly disgruntled. I get it. He's great, but you have the other three. Maybe you should probably also give the other ones compliments as well, other than just saying how he's so great at everything.
The less that a person has to offer in the world, very often the more elegant the postures are. So you find a guy
did
like
Chuck
the coyote,
the funding?
Who's a pretty scrabbly guy. And
maybe Chuck did fund him,
I
don't know.
Has both kinds of tics, a facial tic and the kind that carry Rocky Mountain.
My favorite director, and the one that's given me the most money for this project, is Chuck Jones. The other two can go suck.
Say that he's saying hello in his own language. In the background, you put a Roadrunner, who also is based on the same principle, the little head, long neck, slightly pear-shaped body, tail up like so.
I will say, for children, this is great to like... This is a great tutorial.
Fight or kill a rattlesnake or something, which they do.
Pretty simple shapes. He describes how to draw the characters. He can probably draw at home.
The only thing that's ever heard is on these cartoons. So, like so, and then you bring the long legs up. They're sort of like flying fish of the land, the Roadrunner is.
Again, what's so funny about this is, like, Clampett was the one around this time who was, like, giving seminars and stuff about the Looney Tunes cartoons. So it's kind of funny how, like, what the
this
hell?
The way this gives
what
you some idea.
We haven't heard from Bob since the first part, pretty much.
He was a four-legged animal who was like this, and we tended to call him Don Coyote. Fortunately, we didn't. But we were using the Latin description of him, Carnivorus vulgaris, and the Roadrunner Accelerata Incredibilis.
Oh, my God. That's what they look like in Kirby versus Acme. They go really drastic with it.
But he gradually became a little different, and this was awkward to animate.
That's who I keep thinking about.
But you notice that he was emaciated then, And I don't know why the tongue was sticking out.
Because it's funny.
At any rate,
I don't know why the tongue was sticking out. That was stupid.
Over a period of time.
I get the general gist of this, of you know, having animation professionals talk about animation. And, you know, I wish it was done better.
Mike Maltese and I always felt that they should be kept in the southwestern American desert, although there seemed like you could do marvelous things in a city or in, you know, or up in the Arctic or someplace like that. But not so. The characters had to remain in the southwestern American desert, and the more we narrowed it, the better it got. I mean, the more discipline you impose.
And they have to stay in the desert. Didn't your crew do one where it took place in the wintertime?
We don't talk about that.
The roadrunner stays on a road, ipso facto. We impose that. The roadrunner can leave the road, providing he draws a white line across the desert or puts a sign which says detour or something of that kind. So basically, the seven or eight disciplines that were employed, by and by, it almost came down to the idea the only enemy that the coyote had was gravity.
Fair.
I mean, he was always falling off at things.
Boring. Yeah. I love this one, though, to be fair. So good.
The rotor never harms the coyote beyond coming up behind him and saying beep beep.
Bing. They're showing roadrunner coyotes we don't always see.
Which is good. And that would bounce him back and the whole thing would continue on.
Although this one we have seen.
Wiley 5, baby!
Yeah, boy. We should do it. We should always do more, because I love covering.
By some curious coincidence, nobody knew why.
Yeah,
they're fun. Oh, yeah. This gag, I know. Yeah. This is a good one. Yeah.
Way in Hopalong Casualty, there was a marvelous thing, and I'm going to get him. Ken Harris animated this, and the roadrunner, the coyote was trying to capture the roadrunner, and he had a bottle of Acme. Earthquake pills.
Yeah.
Fool your friends.
You can tell he loved this gag because he also included it in the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner.
So he put a bunch of them out there and then put a sign on saying bird seed. The roadrunner came in and ate it. And the coyote thought, boy, I've got him. You know, he's full of them. And, but the roadrunner went off, and then he looked at it, and he was disappointed in the thing. So he took
Man,
the top off.
Man, he a really good job summarizing cartoons.
We
should get him on our show.
To see whether he was, you know, and it hit him.
If only.
So on. And then he, and then being completely...
Oh, that would be the finale.
The ghost of Chuck?
Drank them all.
Absolutely. There's no way. Yeah, we just borrow the Ouija board, little Richard head, and...
Wait, why does it keep telling us to have burgers?
Eat Red Robin. Red Robin. Nib.
Oh, no. I love Not this gag, too. It's a great gag. I love it, because you're just waiting for something to happen.
Civilization. And it's incredible animated, too.
The Michael J. Fox story. No, I'm sorry.
Oh! I mean, look, if you can joke about it.
Yeah.
She destroys the rock.
So good. It's so good. And it's so well timed too. It's just
Do I miss the characters of Warner
Brothers?
Yeah, of course. When you spend so much time with them, they become very much the part of your life, and you get involved with them. Also, you've seen them develop. So each one of these characters became endearing, you know, and you got to understand them and like them, and all of a sudden the rug came out from underneath it. Jack Warner, in some brilliant piece of his own logic, decided to close the cartoon studio, presumably for economic reasons. However, the Bugs Bunny show has been on networks one way or the other, not one way or the other, one way. That is primetime television, either on Saturday or on primetime in the evenings since 1956. And it just seems to me that these characters are still very much alive, and the people that did them
for now
are still alive. Chris Freeling obviously could do Yosemite Sams and Tweety Bird and Sylvester's and stuff. And I'd love to be able to do the Roadrunner and Coyote.
Well, yeah.
Some more short subjects.
That's why they did the specials, I think.
A good investment. But the wisdom of...
maybe this is the gateway to doing some of that.
Seems to indicate differently.
I do believe that the...
So this was definitely before the 50s. The movies then.
Still,
anything like this
is dominant in their humor. I think people still enjoy, adults, children alike, still enjoy these things. Although
What do you think?
Theater anymore because the theaters just don't buy them because they have one big picture, and they don't want to take up the time with a cartoon.
And the only times that I've been allowed to do it. To do any Roadrunner and Coyotes was to do four or five little segments for the Electric Company two or three years ago.
Morgan Freeman has worked with Roadrunner and Coyote.
The Roadrunner and Coyote were considered too violent to be used on network television, but they were not considered too violent to be used on a children's television workshop program in the Electric Company. So in a way, it's kind of a justification.
You can tell it's killing Chuck that's only how he's able to do it.
Today, animation flourishes around the world as an industry on television and in theatrical feature films, and as a medium of personal expression by independent artist filmmakers and other communicators. The conditions of financing and distribution that made the Warner shorts possible no longer exist, so we will probably never see their like again. Well, the boys from Termite Terrace expanded the emotional horizons of the new art of animation.
Yes.
And their work.
Thank you, New York State Education, for producing art.
The continuing overwhelming popularity of the
likes of the world,
and the public's
like,
affection for the characters is the ultimate tribute that can be paid to the special genius of the boys from Termite Terrace.
And oh yes, great,
yeah,
perfect.
There's like two other ones that end with the end of what's on the dock, but given it's a great ending,
I
so.
I killed the rabbit. Poor widow Bunny.
It's also interesting to watch this and go like, oh, they did a master run.
Well, what did you expect in
always
an opera?
Works.
A happy ending?
Yeah. Okay. It was really only a minute of Bugs Bunny said that? Why did it feel longer? I feel duped.
Because attention spans?
You know what? Probably. This entire running gag is just a minute. I feel duped. I think you all should as well. This is the thanks you get for giving us the money.
Our entire
show. The big running gag we've had has been a sham. It's a sham, I tell you.
A goddamn sham.
This was all right. I liked the part when they actually allowed people to give analysis, although this was very... And look, I say this as if we weren't also Chuck-heavy, but this was very Chuck-heavy. And I wish they would have given a bit more time to Bob Clampett and Friz Freleng and maybe some of the other people. But you could tell that... John Canemaker was a big Chuck fan, and so built the thing around him. And I really hope the other guys liked that.
And that's, it's not great because it's called The Boys from Termite Terrace, not Chuck Jones and his fellows.
It's Chuck and Friends.
It's not the Chuck Jones. Yeah, exactly.
Obviously the parts where it's John Canemaker explaining are the worst parts of this because he isn't a great presenter at this stage. Look, I'm sure he's a great guy. His accomplishments speak for themselves. Yeah. I just think that, choosing to bridge a lot of the first part around him rather than around actually bridging a good story, I think is not a great call because, a lot of this lives and dies with him and he's just sort of, we have Bugs Bunny sitting down. It's not exactly captivating. Or as captivating as some of the stuff that Chuck and Friz and Bob talk about.
No, it's not. It's not captivating. And they cut to Chuck talk like drawing the characters, and that's captivating. That's interesting.
Chuck.
So there is a way you can do this where it's not like
dull or anything, but yeah, John's not that entertaining of a presenter. And the editing, you know, it's so strange because, like, there are sections of this where the editing is very well done, where it's not terrible, and then it'll just, like, it'll cut off too soon, or cut off a cartoon too soon, or they'll talk to a director, or they reference a director, then they show a short from another director. It's like, you're supposed to have a little more cohesion in your
main documentary. It's very much like, it's very much, okay, we have this kind of television budget, because we only have these many shorts, and we have this degree of editing at this stage, and we have this degree of hosting, and we have this degree of direction that only really emphasizes one of the three of the people that we have. It's not well made. It's not great. There's a bias, and it shouldn't have a bias. It's somewhat informational about some of this, but other documentaries and things would do a better job. I think it's fine. I think that, you know, it works in some respects, but mostly doesn't.
Yeah, it's nice that we have this to look at, because again, finding 70s interviews of these guys, it's not impossible, but like, this is around the time where people were starting to really, you know, pay attention to the Looney Tunes directors as directors, as animation professionals. But it's just a shame that it, like, this is the best, like, this is the most prominent one at that time. Because, like, after this, you got the older Chuck interviews, which are great Chuck interviews, but, you know, he's older. You got the Frizz interviews, and the Frizz interviews stayed throughout. They're good. And Clampett's, not much, because they had a falling out
with him. Why. Maybe because he wasn't in much of this. I don't know, man.
Did they, hold on, did John, like, just, like, when over dinner one night, John's like, yes, I interviewed Bob, just Chuck. Okay, tell me what he said. Well, he said this. That's a lie.
He didn't know.
That's an exaggeration. That's, you didn't know any of that. I guess I have to cut him out of this. He's not in the second part at all.
Something happened.
Something happened. All right. So what would you give a sample rating?
I guess, like,
if you had to?
3.
Yeah, I'd say 3 out of 5. It's a nice thing to watch if you want, like, some good talking heads of these interviewers. But it's too Chuck focused to really get a full perspective on Termite Terrence as a whole.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think part of that would have to do with they didn't interview a lot of people. Which, again, budget, but I think if you're going to call the boys from Termite Terrace, you got to interview more than 3 people.
There's barely any boys. So, you got to...
No. They're not even boys. They're middle-aged. Not even... How old were they? I don't know. The thing,
in,
like,
their 50s and 60s?
Older, yes, but not like... 50s and 60s, I guess, yeah. I mean, like, the fact that they were like, yeah, we're going to do a reenactment of Duck Amuck. A short from 22 years ago. It's like, oh,
yeah,
that's not long.
It's odd to say, but that's, yeah, no. They weren't too far removed from the end of it. It'd only been like, they'd only been out of there for like a good 10, 11 years. So, which is why they were really still longing to do more.
So, yeah, that's our thoughts on, that's the end of our commentary here on Camera 3, The Boys from Termite Terrace. Hope you enjoyed it. And, so stay tuned next month for a commentary that we don't know what we're going to do. Next month is all in your hands.
Get some options out, and then we're going to go and do it. You know, hopefully you guys enjoy these, and that we'll give you guys some good stuff to have that our usual patrons, or not patrons, our usual people won't get to enjoy.
All right, so until next time, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and Hope you enjoyed us attacking a special for only having a minute of a thing that I thought lasted 30. Good night.
Howdy, not sit down.
Arrgh.
Oh.